Pentagon officials started warning Congress over 2 years ago that letting automatic budget cuts take place would cost money, not save it. A new report from the Government Accountability Office shows some evidence that they were right about that. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu writes about it in this week's edition of Inside the Reporter's Notebook. Bob Hale's been on this program and talked about that before, but until this Government Accountability Office report, Jared, I haven't seen any hard numbers. Now we have some.
Yeah, as you say, this is something defense leaders were warning about at the time, including Bob Hale, you know, just slashing things all of a sudden as sequestration required back in 2013. You know, it cut the overall defense budget by $37 billion all in one fell swoop halfway through the fiscal year. They were warning that it would cost money because of all the efficiencies involved in canceling contracts, starting and stopping programs, et cetera, et cetera. And I, for one, like you, have been waiting for some empirical evidence that shows that they were right, at least partially. And I do think this GAO report gives us some evidence that they were. When you look at it on the whole, I think you'd be hard-pressed to say that there weren't some real savings to the federal budget. I mean, DOD really did cut $37 billion out of its spending in 2013, and not all of that was offset by the dumb things that it had to do that year, but some of it was, and it really did do some dumb things, as we've heard about sort of anecdotally over the past couple years, mostly not by choice. So some of the examples GAO calls out are relatively simple, like the Navy deciding that it could only afford to run its ports during business hours, like 9 to 5. That ended up meaning that ships had to basically wait around all night before they could hook up to shoreside electric power. And in one case, just doing that for three ships in one night wound up costing more than $130,000. That's the kind of thing that adds up, and the kind of thing that is hard to calculate over time in 1 year unless you really have a system in place to calculate it, which is what GAO criticized the department for. But they also found some other more concrete, bigger examples. Interesting, a lot of these are in the Navy. I don't know if that's just because they kept better data. But for example, the Navy had to cancel a contract to upgrade the maintenance facilities for its P-8 airplanes. And just doing that meant that it spent an extra $191 million because it had to rely on its older maintenance procedures. And you might also remember that the Navy had to bring back the USS Truman back into port all of a sudden, or actually not deploy it. They didn't bring it back, but they couldn't deploy it when sequestration first hit. The Navy says that decision alone cost the service more than $7 million because it just threw its entire deployment plan out of whack, in addition to all of the, you know, uncertainties and personal hardships for that entire many thousands of members that were part of the crew. And there are a lot of other examples, too, where all this chaos that was going on back in 2013 didn't necessarily cost extra money, but it didn't save anything either. It just moved spending into future years. So, for example, the Army saved about $690 million in 2013 by canceling contracts to fix something like 16,000 pieces of equipment. But that stuff that's coming back from the wars has to get fixed at some point. So that bill just moved from 2013 to 2015. So the Army paid it this year instead of in 2013.
You pulled out one of the most important facts that I think was in this GAO report, and it is that a lot of the costs that were incurred or will be incurred because of sequestration aren't apparent now, aren't and won't be for some time to come.
That's right. I mean, you cannot calculate things like decreased employee morale. I mean, the department's one of the biggest cost savings in this entire round was just by furloughing employees. We don't know what that ultimately cost the department in, in future human capital terms and its ability to recruit and retain people. That's the sort of thing that you can't quantify, and GAO pointed that out in that report. We do know that there are numbers around things like base maintenance. The Army, for example, cut its budget for preventative maintenance by $1 billion, 40% of its entire budget for sustainment in 2013. That's a big deal. And that's not the kind of thing that it's been able to make up, because while the budget for DOD has gotten a little bit better in 2014 and 2015, it's still a relatively low priority because all of that money still comes out of the same operation and maintenance pot that pays for training and readiness of troops, which is a much higher priority right now because they're behind too. So it's impossible to say at this point what the effects of not doing building maintenance on all of your bases or a significant amount of building maintenance on all of your bases across the country and around the world, you know, are going to tally up to around the years. And they're not catching up on it. The department's been very clear that they are taking risk in that, even while their budget picture has gotten better in 15 and 16, and it may get worse again, back down to 13-style numbers in 2016.
Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu going inside the DOD reporter's notebook, and you can find the details in the notebook at federalnewsradio.com. It's an end of an era at the United States Navy. They're saying bye-bye to the BlackBerry. There are some folks that'll cry over this, believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably used to it by now. It was first introduced into the Navy Marine Corps intranet back in 2013, about the same time it came into the rest of DOD. It's been, as I say in the notebook, a staple within DOD since then. But it's finally on its way out. It's going to reach its end of life based on the contract the Navy Department has with BlackBerry, the Canadian company, formerly known as Research in Motion, later this year. So they are moving, along with the rest of the country, or the rest of the world, really, into another series of products. Android and Apple mostly. The Apple products are the only ones that are certified on NMCI right now, so they are urging all of their commands right now to start making that transition, including offering some example contract language that they can use to do that and transition kind of seamlessly with their wireless carriers. To do this kind of securely, they're using some technology used by Good Technology, one of the leaders in this space, where you'll basically be able to have your government data in a secure encrypted container, but you can also use the same phone, whether it's an iPhone or an iPad or in the future an Android device, to also host your, you know, your personal data, use your own apps, you know, use your own personal email on the same device, and all of your government business will be in this, you know, separate secure container that's encrypted. The Navy's upgraded its NMCI system with, they say, enough capacity to handle 15,000 of those Apple and future Android devices. For now, they're going to expand that to about 30,000 by this summer, which will basically be enough to take over all of the BlackBerry business that they're running right now. As I say, Android is coming later. For now, it's the iPhone 5, the iPhone 6, the iPhone 6 Plus, and a couple of iPad models.
There's four words that I note in this notebook item that jumped right out at me, Jared, regarding the transition here. You write, the Navy Department CIO told local commands they need to begin transitioning their users to other devices. Here are the four words: as quickly as possible. After all of the time that it's taken for them to realize that BlackBerries are not what they used to be, at least as far as popularity and usability go, now it seems they are ready, willing, and able to make the switch really quickly.
Well, without commenting on the capabilities of BlackBerry, that will get me in trouble with those folks. I think this is something that's been in the works for a long time. The Defense Information Systems Agency has been working for quite a while to get these devices certified, both in classified and unclassified environments for the Defense Department. They are now there with several both Android and Apple devices. This BlackBerry plan is nearing its end of life, and I think the reason the Navy wants to transition as quickly as possible is because of that fact, and because all of the both security requirements and the contractual arrangements that they would need to quickly transition their existing wireless plans from BlackBerry to Apple and Android are now in place, and they want to make sure that happens as quickly as possible.
All right, my favorite item in the notebook this week: three simple words. Hi, I'm Ash. It sounds so friendly. And so guy next door-ish, and yet there's a historic significance to those three words, isn't there?
It does. Ash Carter becoming the first defense secretary to join Facebook. It comes about a month after he first made a visit to that company's campus in Silicon Valley last month, as he was sort of touring Silicon Valley to kind of ingratiate the Defense Department with the high-tech industry out there. But the Defense Department says that's not really the reason. They say he was impressed by what Facebook has to offer and the sort of communication capabilities that it kind of offers to the broader society. But they've also been influenced by the fact that military families have an outsized impact on Facebook. Not impact necessarily, but a greater usage rate on Facebook than the general population. The statistics that they sent out to us today is that 89% of military families use Facebook at least once a day. And one reason for that is because it's just become a really popular mechanism for people in different time zones, as military families often are, to communicate with deployed family members across the world. So they use this communication mechanism at a higher rate than the general population. So that's the main reason that, according to DOD, that the secretary is jumping on board with Facebook right now. The statement they sent us says he looks forward to using it to highlight the outstanding work that the military does. And that also he wants to get more feedback from service members and their families in a way that he couldn't possibly do by just reading emails and taking phone calls from the 3 million people that make up the uniformed and non-uniformed workforce.
We'll be clear that his Facebook profile is at facebook.com/secdef.
Secdef, that's right.
There are two others that at least that I see, and there may be more. Facebook pages that purport to be the Secretary of Defense, but in fact are not. And one is a page that just lists him as politician, and another lists him as University of Oxford. Under the worked at, where you can say where you worked, it just says Deputy Secretary of Defense William Lynn. I'm not sure what that means exactly, but it is what it is. And the real Ashton Carter's on Facebook at facebook.com/.
That's what you get by going to the headquarters. You can get a verified Facebook account.
That's right.
It's a good thing that he went there.
Thank you for going inside the reporter's notebook with us as always, Jared.
You bet.